Let me give you what I hope is our aim for today, and we'll see how we do it actually hitting it. Here's my aim: to get us collectively thinking about and talking, both as church family and as people in individual homes, to get us thinking and talking about how we bring up children within a Christian context. So how we bring up children within our church family and with individual homes. Because the Bible actually, and the New Testament in particular, doesn't really give specifics on how to bring up children. I've looked pretty hard. There is nothing in there about potty training, which is what I'm currently having to think through. I haven't yet seen anything about when it's okay to let children go on the tube by themselves in the Bible. There isn't a mention anywhere I can see of schools at all, let alone which schools might be the ones to send your children to. But that doesn't mean that as Christian people and as a church family together, we shouldn't be thinking Christianly in how we bring them up. That we shouldn't be thinking in a different way to the way our society does. Because whilst there are a few specifics in God's words about bringing up children, there are a great many wonderful truths that will feed together feed into the way we think about bringing up children. So you'll have to forgive me here. I usually teach teenagers, so I've got a particular teenage-friendly illustration for us. I'm sorry, it's a little bit childish. Here are my giant novelty glasses. I like to put them on. They make everything more fun. Now, naturally, the way I see the world is the way my society does. I see it and think about it and understand it in the way my society informs me. It's the same for all of us. That affects then the decisions I make, the reasons I make those decisions. It affects and will affect the way we bring up children and treat children in our church family and in our homes. But our society's worldview, the way our society sees the world, is very different to the world God presents in his words. So as a Christian, I increasingly, here comes the glasses, want to see the world, get it, in the way God does. I want to put on a God's view perspective of the world I live in. Because that will then inform the way I think about making all of those same decisions. Whether that's where I think about sending my children to school, or how I help my children learn to behave rightly. Actually, lots of those decisions might end up being the same as my society does, as our society makes, but for very different reasons, because we understand and see the world from God's perspective, not our own. Now, we could spend hours and hours and hours trying to work out God's worldview, God's understanding of this world. I think it takes a lifetime to learn, a lifetime to understand, and we will only truly get it, I think, when we get to the new creation. So what we're going to do over the next 45 minutes is spend some time putting some key building blocks in place for God's worldview, and then applying it to three specific areas of raising children at the moment within our church family and within our homes. Really, it's a process we could apply to any area of life. Any area where putting on God's worldview, thinking about an issue at hand. So we could think about this when it comes to the way we think about politics, for instance. It'd be exactly the same. Putting on God's worldview and making our own decisions. We're just applying it to some particular issues with bringing up children. I've tried to pick three reasonably specific ones to help us think it through specifically. They're not particularly the three issues that are most pressing or most important. And my aim is to get us talking about applying a worldview to bringing up children. So that we're practiced at it to be able to do it in lots of different areas of both bringing up children and in life generally. Now, I know not every one of us here is a parent. I know some of us are parents with children who have left home. These are still useful things for us to think about. I suspect almost all of us will be in a group of women where there are people who are trying to bring up children, and we want to be able to support and encourage them and think it through with them. We are all members of a church family with lots and lots of children around, whether they're 2 weeks old or going on sort of 60 years old, but 20 years old, still at home. Lots of things for us to think about as a church family, to think about how to bring up children. So before we dive in and look at these particular issues, I'm going to highlight three assumptions that I'm not going to spend much time trying to convince us of, because I think broadly in this room we'd agree they're true, and then we'll apply those to those particular issues. I hope that's clear. I hope you understand what we're trying to do and the way we're going to go about things. There's a handout on your tables. If there's not quite enough on your table, there's at least one empty table over there, two at the back. So you can grab sheets if you need them. Here you go. Assumption number one. God is in control. Now, I often forget this. I don't know about you. When it comes to our society and collective thinking, and particularly when it comes to children, it feels like I have so little control. Home life seems chaotic enough that I just try and keep up. I expect it's the same for lots of us. There doesn't seem to be very much space or time to influence anything. Similarly, at church on a Sunday, there are snatched little conversations. Often, do we really have space to influence the way people are thinking about bringing up children or the children themselves? But that is not how God thinks about this world, as out of control or trying to keep up. It's not how he describes his world. I've put a couple of references down on your sheet that I think express God's control. But I wonder if we could just briefly turn to Psalm 139, which is on page 627. Page 627, Psalm 139. This is a wonderfully reassuring psalm, all about God's control. I'm just going to read the first six verses, but by all means, go away and read it all later. Psalm 139, verse 1. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit up and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in, behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. The psalm continues in a similar way. It's mind-boggling and stretching of what our God is like, isn't it? But it's particularly applied to the individual. Isn't it reassuring for the parent of teenagers that our Lord knows when your teenager will wake up this Saturday, even if you don't, even if it is unfathomably long for you? He knows what we will say before we say it. He hems us up. He knows our lifespan, even if we don't. You'll see from that Acts quote on the sheet, it is God who decides when and where we live. He decides our personalities, our characteristics. The psalm continues in verses 13 and 14. David talking about being knit together by God in the womb. God knows what we are like, what our characteristics are, where and when we live, how our experiences will affect us. He is in control. And we could spend way more time thinking this in. Thinking about God's control of the weather, or his knowledge of who our next prime minister will be. He knows it all. Now, there are lots and lots of implications of God being in control, but it seems to me the primary way God uses his control or his sovereignty is to remind his people that he's in control, and to reassure them of that. And as we think about bringing up children within our church family and within our homes, there are huge reassurances for us. Wonderful things for us to remember. So from God's way or God's perspective, putting on God's worldview, there aren't mistakes here. So if we have children, your children are the precise children that God wanted you to have. However much you might feel about them, however you might feel about them, however easy or hard you think it is. And we could turn it the other way around, couldn't we? For your children, God has chosen you to be their parent. Not anyone else in this room, not anyone else in our church family. It is you who are the precise person God thinks should bring up your children. Now, it doesn't mean things will always be perfect. It doesn't mean things will be easy and plain sailing all the time. But that is wonderfully reassuring, isn't it? There's not been a mistake. Things haven't gone out of control, however much it might feel like it. And it's exactly the same as we think about it from a church family perspective too. So the children in our church family have been placed there by God. As we sit at church on a Sunday, it can be very easy to think, I wish every single child was like that child here. Or, I wish there were no children here. Or, if you're a child in particular, wouldn't it be fun if everyone was a child here? God has carefully selected the children in our church family. He has carefully selected their characteristics, their personalities, and what they are like. He thinks we need them, and they need us as a church family. Similarly, as adults in this room, we are perfectly placed by God to be able to help one another think about raising children and think about applying this worldview to bringing up children. The people sat around you now are the people God has decided to place here to help us think this through together. And lastly, it's wonderfully reassuring because it means the things our children are hearing in our society, in films and books and TV and in schools, whilst lots of it might be opposed to what God says, they are not beyond him. It is not out of his control. He is much bigger and more powerful than many, many of the things we worry about for our children. God is in control. That's big assumption number one. We'll be briefer on the second two. Assumption number two, children are eternal. Children, like all people, last forever. Sorry if that's terrifying news to some of you younger mothers, that children last forever. Don't worry, they grow up, but they last forever. It's a truth that runs through God's words. You can't read very much of it without realising it. Again, there are a selection of verses from God's words that I think show us that. But really, it's a thread everywhere. And knowing that children will last forever, like all people, will affect our desires and ambitions for them. So it is absolutely right that we think about real, everyday needs of our children. And it's absolutely right that we do that as a church family on a Sunday as well. But it would be a problem if it's the only thing we're concerned for, the everyday needs, the this life needs. Because if that's the case, we're seeing our children in exactly the same way our society sees them. And not in the way that God sees them, as we put on our God's eye view, our God's worldview. Now, how that plays out in bringing up children is something that we're going to have to think through together. There's not particularly right and wrong outworkings. But it might mean, instead of primarily desiring behavioural change from our children, we aim instead for a heart change, a love for the Lord. So it would be wonderful to have children who are pleasant to be around all the time, wouldn't it? And that really would be a good aim to have. It really would be wonderful to have children who leave home at 18 or 45, whenever it is, who are rounded individuals, who can iron and cook something other than pasta and ketchup, but knowing that they will live forever means we'll prioritise equipping them for life forever. We'll want to help them grow a love for Jesus, for our Lord and his words. We'll want to help them recognise the nature of their own sin. We'll want to help them engage in a society that thinks differently to God. Now, of course, the two aren't mutually exclusive. We can, of course, aim for behavioural change and heart change. It's just a question of what are we prioritising. Heart change, I think, will be the priority over behavioural change because children last forever. Now, it's just at this point I'd like to pause and remind you of assumption number one, that God is in control. I don't want us to start worrying about this, to start thinking, I don't know how to do this, or this is beyond me, or this seems impossible. Wonderfully, we're in a room of wise and creative people who can help us think this through, help us work out what this might look like for our children, in our family, with our context. But it is just worth getting our head around what it looks like, putting on God's views, knowing our children last forever. That's assumption number two. Last of the assumptions, assumption number three, that Jesus' way is the best way. I think of all the three assumptions I've mentioned, this is the one I forget the quickest. So our society, I think, makes us believe often that Jesus, Christianity and Christians in general are outdated, boring, that they're restricted, and at times increasingly morally questionable. But that is not true. It is absolutely not true. It's not even close to the truth. It is the opposite of true. Jesus is the most compelling, humble, brilliant, and wise person who has ever lived. As he speaks, people are amazed by him. His actions are incredible. He not only cares about the people no one cares about, he also cares about the people everyone cares about. He is a ruler who serves in the most extravagant way by dying for people. And when I remember it, I really, really do want my children to know him and love him like I do. He's the best person who ever lived. And it's not simply Jesus, is it? The life he enables Christian people to live is far better than anything else on offer from our society as well, isn't it? Through Jesus' actions, people are genuinely transformed. We are enabled to live fundamentally good lives, now, today, and then forever. So it's easy to buy into our society's thinking and think we might be burdening children with a Christian life. Lots of things squeeze out time that could be spent getting to know Jesus, time that could be spent looking at his words or thinking about why the kind of life he enables people to live is so good. Our society, and actually our children, will tell us that playing sports matches or going to a friend's for a sleepover or getting great A-levels will all be things that are brilliant for them. And they are brilliant for them. But all of those things can affect our children's ability to engage with Jesus as well. And we quickly buy into thinking those things are useful and good, and Jesus is the same and boring and dull. I know it myself, and I assume, rightly or wrongly, that you're all similar to me. But it is so far from burdensome. It is wonderful. Now, I've spent quite a lot of time talking. We could have done this with any of these three assumptions. We're going to do it with this last one. Could you please pick up a Bible and turn to Colossians 3, page 1185, and I'm going to get you to talk some of these things through. Page 1185. Just to give you a little context, in in verses 1 to 4, immediately, chapter 3, sorry, verses 1 to 4, which come immediately before the passage I'd like you to look at. Paul, who wrote Colossians, has just described a reality for Christian people. Because of what Christ has done, Christian people are now seated in God's heavenly throne room with Jesus. That is the reality for Christian people. From verse 5, he then describes how they can live now. I'm going to read verses 5 to 17, mostly so you're not all reading it as tables at the same time and trying not to listen to one another as you do it. So I'm going to read Colossians 3. Sorry, you've all turned there and I haven't. Colossians 3, verses 5 to 17. And I'd like you just to talk through those. I've put four little questions on there. We've just got 5 minutes to do this, but the aim is to try and remind ourselves that Jesus' way really is the best way. Let me read Colossians 3 from verse 5. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you: sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. In these you too once walked when you were living in them, but now you must put them all away: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you've put off the old self with its practices, and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Here there is no Greek or Jew, Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Christ is all and in all. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another. And if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you are called in one body. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So turn on your tables, and why not talk through those questions? We've got about 5 minutes to do that. I hope that you personally have found that encouraging, whether you've got children or not, as you think this through. Again, putting those sort of things in place, putting God's worldview in place, can help us think about any area of life. It's from now we really specifically are going to think about bringing up children, both at home and within our church family. The plan here is to talk through three issues: helping children engage with Jesus, helping them think about sex, gender, relationships, those kind of issues, and helping them think about social media. My plan is to get you to talk about it for a little bit, to work out what's tricky, where we feel like we struggle to think it through, partly to air it, because I suspect some of us will find different things about these issues difficult. Then I plan to just give some ideas of how we could make progress in this area, and then again get us to discuss some questions together. Now, I need to be really clear. We are moving very definitely from an area of this is what the Bible says is true to this is some ways we might be able to live this out or do this. So things that are said aren't what God says now. They are applied ideas from God's worldview. There is great freedom here, but it is worth us thinking hard at what that will look like. And it won't look the same for different families who are thinking very hard about it, with different children of different ages and different personalities, and different family situations, different jobs, and different parents' personalities. The same things applied very well to different families and to our church family could look very different for individuals. I hope that's clear. I'll try and remind you that again, that we're not talking about truth. There's great freedom, but it is worth thinking hard about applying it together. So let's start with helping children engage with Jesus. What I'd like you to do is just briefly turn back into your tables and discuss Why do we find this hard? So why do we find this hard at home? Or why did we find this hard if your children have left home? Or more broadly, on a Sunday, like, why is it hard to include children within what happens on a Sunday, whether that's after the service, after the meetings as we're chatting? Why is it hard to engage children with Jesus? Just 2 minutes. Off we go. Let's come back together. That may feel like it's very short, and in some ways that is purposeful. This is designed to be a conversation starter for something for us to continue to think about as a church family, rather than we're going to nail all the issues in one go. As I was thinking about it, I think the reason I find this hard is because I want a quick fix. I want to be able to do something that means my children then love Jesus. And that is just not the reality, is it? It's not the reality, and we can see that from God's words as well. Paul sends multiple letters, all the apostles do, to Christians who they've already done ministry with to engage them with Jesus for various reasons. I've put a quote there from 1 Thessalonians. It's Paul's attitude to ministry, which I think is probably quite helpful for parents and for us as we think about ministering to one another generally, but again, specifically children in our church family. From 1 Thessalonians 2, Paul says, "We were gentle among you like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us." I think broadly, Paul talks about two things that he thinks is ministry in that verse, in 1 Thessalonians 2:8. He talks about sharing the gospel and sharing himself. And I think that's probably a helpful, although not necessarily correct, framework of thinking about a helpful framework for thinking about bringing up children. Because there are a number of structured opportunities we can create to engage our children with Jesus. And there are like loads and loads of unstructured ways we can do it, with this kind of sharing our lives. So there are multiple structured ways we can do it. It could be a formalised Bible time, once a week, once a day, multiple times a day. It could be looking at bedtime stories, reading bedtime stories, either from the Bible or some of the wonderful children's books there are of Bible stories. It could be purposefully discussing things that have been learned on a Sunday, at Sunday school, or that you have learned on a Sunday from listening to a sermon. What a great test of whether or not you've understood a sermon. Can you explain it to your five-year-old in a way they understand? I imagine fruitful for you and for them. But there are ample informal opportunities as well, aren't there? I'm going to get you to think about this in a minute. But it seems that failures, whether they are our failures or our children's failures, are a great opportunity to talk about the gospel, a great chance to discuss true things. And things we learn from films and TV, a great opportunity to discuss what does society think and how does it compare to what God thinks. And lots of opportunities. Telling children off are a wonderful opportunity to talk about the gospel. God is in charge. God is in control. God sees and knows everything. We can talk about that. We can talk about the nature of our hearts, the nature of sin. We can talk about a God who forgives and loves us, even though we let him down. Loads and loads of opportunities to talk about different aspects of the gospel as we, I think rightly, tell our children off. But also we get to model Christian living to our children, don't we? And I mean our children as in our church family's children as well. This isn't just parents who model Christian living. One of the wonderful things that happens in the youth group is we have Christian people in their 20s and 30s modelling Christian behaviour and what it looks like to be a godly office worker to the 11, 12 and 13-year-olds on a Friday night. They will purposefully seek opportunities to talk about the way they behave as Christians in their office. Now, that has no relevance to an 11-year-old's life in school. They are not going to have to write a very boring report on I don't know what it might be, the weather, who knows. But they do have to live in a world that doesn't know Jesus. They do have to, and we do want to encourage them to think about sharing Jesus with their friends in the same way that some of our leaders are trying to share Jesus with their colleagues. And we can do that on a Sunday morning, and whether or not we've got children, and we can definitely do it as parents. I think particularly for parents, but broadly as a church family, your children will very quickly work out what your priorities are. What is worth missing church for and what isn't? What is worth moving mountains to make happen and what isn't? Now, I don't want us to think, oh goodness, I fail in this area. We've all failed. None of us are perfect. Don't worry. God is in control. But it is worth us thinking about, what are we communicating to our children in the way we behave in our priorities? Now, let me give you some of the ways I think we formally try to support both parents and us as a church family to be engaging children with Jesus within the groups we run. The Sunday school, every child goes home with a take-home sheet. That will tell you, parents, what they've been learning. It is a very easy opportunity to engage your children with Jesus. Children learn things by repetition, don't they? That is why Teletubbies shows things more than once. Children love it. That's why all the teenagers have been doing all their revision to make sure they remember and learn the things they learned 6 months ago. And doing something twice means you're more likely to remember it. Doing something twice means you're more likely to remember it. And so just talking about the take-home sheets is a wonderful opportunity to engage children with Jesus. The youth groups all get a term card, so children, or parents of children in the youth group can know what their children are looking at each time they go to youth group. The children's team send a parent's email once a term, I think, to engage children, parents with what's going on and begin to help them think through ways they might be able to do that. And we open up the Bible in every single one of our meetings with children and teenagers. I think the primary way we help children, particularly primary school parents of primary school age children, engage their children with Jesus is we take their children away on a Sunday morning. We do that purposefully so that parents can listen to the Bible being taught, so that they are able to speak about that with one another in a congregation and with their children. We take them away so that you can sing truth to one another on a Sunday morning. There are lots and lots of ways I think we try and formally support parents and us as a church family so we're able to do that, engage our children with Jesus. And I think the other way we kind of more subtly can do that is with people in this room or on a Sunday morning or a Sunday afternoon as we speak truth in love to one another. You'll notice that the children don't arrive back immediately as soon as the meeting finishes at the 10:30. And at the 4 p.m. they don't even come back to St. Helens at all. You have to go to them. That is so there is space for conversation about truth, about the things we've been learning, so that we can be encouraging and building one another up and think about these sort of issues without being distracted by children. It is a wonderful way to support parents. And those of us without children can be doing that too, by encouraging those sort of conversations. Growing a love for Jesus, exactly the same sort of thing we did with Colossians 3. It's a wonderful reminder for parents as they are seeking to encourage their children to live in a way that pleases our Lord. And what I'd like us to do is just, again, turn back into our tables and talk through those three questions. Again, these are conversation starters. They are not going to be answers. I'm sorry. In our groups, why not chat through those questions and see how you get on? Let's come back together there. Again, I hope those have been useful beginnings of conversations. Please do keep talking them through. Remember, what works for one family and one set of children doesn't mean it is right and should work for every family and every set of children. Let's turn now to think about helping children think through the issues of sex, gender, and relationships. I think there are a great many reasons we find this very difficult. Things feel often like they are out of control here. And I think it feels particularly scary or frightening because society's values seem so opposed to the gospel here. And we are left worrying that it will cause our children to reject Jesus. I think that is the deep down fear, right? With these issues. So I've got some thoughts, but again, really, it's collectively, as we think this through, I think will be the most helpful. I think the first thought is we should be proactive and identify as soon as possible the differences between God's worldview and our society's worldview on these issues. Because the sooner we identify those differences, the better able we are going to be to equip our children to spot them too and to spot why. And please remember, the battle isn't lost. So I'm going to talk through some ways I think we can engage various age children with this particular issue. But if you're thinking, help, my children are 14 already, and I don't think I've done any of that, don't panic. The battle isn't lost. We can always engage our children with truth. Many, many people grow up in Christian homes, say they don't believe any of it, and come back to the Lord later on. Keep praying, keep thinking it through. But here are some ideas and some thoughts. Again, they're not right or wrongs, they're just ideas. So I'd encourage you to think about putting in place key truths from a young age with your children. Try and help them know and reinforce that God made each one of us, that he loves us, that he values us, that he knows us, and that whoever we are and whatever we think of ourselves, God hasn't made a mistake. That seems to be lots of the narrative behind lots of these issues. Things are wrong and we can fix them. Encourage your children to examine God's words. Know they're good and true. Help them think through what the nature of sin is like. Rejecting God, and it results in a broken and fallen world, that sin itself is damaging, that ignoring God's words are damaging. There's ample opportunity to do that as children grow up. Help them identify that men and women are different. They are equal, but they are different. And thrill them with Jesus. And I think you can start to do all of those things from very young age, from preschool children easily. It requires some thought through, some thinking through on how to do that. But I think those are all things we can do. As children get older, I think we can begin to help them understand that people think different things to us, that our society has a different worldview, and we can begin to try and identify them. It might be helpful to ask what is being taught in schools and when is it being taught to your children. And you can talk to them afterwards. And that is useful for whatever subject that is. Not particularly the kind of, but although it includes the sort of lessons and times when these issues come up. And then as they move up towards the top end of primary school and secondary school, I think there are other things we can help them identify. That the reliable things are facts and truth, not feelings, is a helpful thing to help them think through, and we'll need to work out how to do it. It's useful to help them work out what tolerance means. That is a particularly now-centric word, isn't it? Is it tolerant to say everything is right and to disagree with it isn't? Or is that actually quite intolerant? Just identify the flaws in our society's worldview. Help them understand, and I think it probably explicitly state, that love is not the same as affirmation. Every parent knows that. No parent will tell their child all the time they can do whatever they want. That is not loving. A Christian person can easily be loving and still say they think things are wrong. Love and affirmation are not the same thing. Normally, by the time your children get to the end of primary school and into secondary school, they'd stop doing that annoying thing where they ask why all the time. And you give them an answer, and they say, why? And then you give them the answer, why? And the answer becomes, just because. Now, just because they've stopped asking why, doesn't mean they don't still need the reasons behind things. So don't just try and explain how what God says is different. Try and work hard to explain why it's different and why it's better. Because I really do believe, and I hope you do, that Jesus' way is better. And why things the way they are. And thrill them with Jesus. He is wonderful. If it's something you particularly want to think through a little bit more, there's this book on our bookstall, which is around on a Sunday. It's a nice short book. Again, it contains advice, not right and wrongs. But it is a book that is aimed at equipping parents, teachers, anyone that is engaged with children on how to help children think about men and women, sex and gender, in a very conversational style. And it's got lots of things we will have been talking about in our groups, and many more ideas, I think, on how we could do that. It's called Gender. It's on the Good Book Company. Brian Seagraves, Hunter Levine, both of them. It's £3 on our bookstall. There are a couple of copies last time I looked, or you can get it online. It might be helpful for just thinking things through, or thought-provoking, yeah, or getting you thinking on how to engage children with these issues. Let me tell you how, as a church, formally with the children's groups and youth groups, we try and support parents in this area. God's words are written by people throughout history, real time, real place, and sex and relationships are a pretty significant part of human life. You can't go very far in God's words without some issue around sex and relationships coming up. We seek to teach through God's words with the children and youth groups. So the issues of sex, gender and relationships come up pretty regularly. They might not come up in precisely the way we think they definitely need to know about it, but they do come up as issues. And we will make sure our children's and youth groups regularly look at some of the early chapters of Genesis on the way God made this world. The children's groups, I think, look at it every 4 years. In the youth groups, we normally look at it every 3 years. And partly to put in those big building blocks on how this world works, the way God made this world and people in it. With the youth groups, we will have specific sessions thinking about sex and relationships and gender. For those with children 11 to 14, we're doing it this Friday evening. We've got a session on sex and relationships. Once a year, we run a marriage day for parents, for married couples. That is a wonderful reminder for married couples on what relationships look like. Children will learn most of what a relationship should look like from their parents. That is the most informative relationship they've got. Part of the reason we run a marriage day is to help married couples look to Jesus so they can seek to model the relationship between Jesus and his church, but also right relationships. It's a wonderful opportunity we've got at home as parents. Again, I'd just like you to turn back and talk through those questions. I think, unfortunately, we're going to be out of time for that last one because it's getting close to quarter past. But let's turn back together and talk through those questions, and I'll cut it short again in a moment. I'm really sorry. I'm going to cut you off there. I know we've barely started a conversation. It's partly because I need to encourage some of you to go and pick up some children. Let me just say, I hate these. This is the beginning of conversations. So I'm sure we all talk about parenting lots. It'd be a shame if, as we talk about parenting, we're not talking about applying God's worldview in that. I don't think we need to hyper-spiritualise parenting, but it does need to be part of our conversation. Why don't I pray and then send off those who need to go collect children. But by all means, catches, yeah. I guess not necessarily the wrong word. And yeah, let me pray. Lord, thank you that you are in control. Even if it doesn't often feel like that, as we are seeking to bring up children, both at home and within a church family. Thank you, Lord, that you equip us to do it with your words, with time, with energy. Again, even if it feels like we're snatching at things sometimes. And please help us collectively think these issues through, both broadly, what it looks like to raise children, and with specific issues. Would we be a church family that is encouraging one another and sharpening one another in this thinking? Please, Lord, yeah, help us make wise decisions as we bring up our children. And please help us to be doing it all for your glory. Amen.